Okay, I'm Pat McDonald. I'm a CMB. Obviously, the best way to do cosmology and fundamental physics with large-scale structure type statistics, but can't do everything you want from the CMB. So we have the Sloan Digital Sky Survey. I've worked almost entirely on the Lyman Alpha Forest, so I'll put more emphasis on that than anyone else would. So first I'm going to just give a brief introduction to SDSS and then talk about four different measurements that are relevant to cosmology and fundamental physics, and then cosmological parameters and a little bit about the future. So I'm sorry if this talk's a little more observational than maybe you'd like. So what are the goals? The goals are always the same, at least for me, is to measure fundamental physics, measure the matter components of the universe, the nature of dark matter, dark energy, how structure came to be, the perturbations from inflation. So here's the picture of the telescope. This is Apache Point Observatory in New Mexico. It's a 2.5-meter telescope, 3-degree field of view, drift scan imaging camera, 5 photometric bands. The target, when it's done, will be 10,000 square degrees, which is a quarter of the sky. There's a 640 fiber spectrograph, meaning you take 640 spectra at the same time, with a target in the end of 100,000 quasars and 1,000,000 galaxies. So these are the main ways that this isn't supposed to, actually. No, this is fine. I mean, it's not supposed to change the slide. I was only wondering about changing the slide.
I have no idea. Okay.
Anyway, I'll just have to keep going back. So the first way, so these are ways that SDSS maps large-scale structure, and particularly the ones that have been used to measure cosmological parameters. So the first one, and really the main galaxy power spectrum is almost synonymous with large-scale structure to a lot of people. This is the power spectrum measured by Tegmark. But it's actually not, it's limited. And one of the limitations is that we don't know the bias of galaxies. We basically don't know how the density field of galaxies, even on large scales, responds to the density field of matter. We can fix this problem within SDSS by using galaxy-galaxy lensing to determine the bias, and that makes the galaxy power spectrum more powerful. There's this paper by Seljak et al. In which we did this. Then there's the Lyman Alpha Forest, which is what I work on, probing inner gas in the intergalactic medium. And finally, the most recent development was the Luminous Red Galaxy, or LRG, correlation function measurement by Daniel Eisenstein. This is actually probes a larger volume than the main galaxy survey. So this is really the more powerful cosmology tool. So then there's other things like quasar clustering, which I'm not going to talk about because they really haven't been used for cosmology. So this is Max Tegmark's pretty figure showing the scales of different observables. CMB probes the largest scales, then galaxy clustering, and clusters, which I'm not going to talk about, but are over here, weak lensing, and finally the Lyman Alpha Forest, which probes the smallest scales. These, of course, all probe different redshifts, which matters. Max has done some tricks to put them all on the same plot. Okay, not SDSS, but the WMAP map. These are the perturbations which are going to grow into the large-scale structure that we see in the Lyman Alpha Forest at redshift 3 or the galaxy power spectrum at lower redshift, although those will probe smaller scales than you see here. This is the WMAP CLs, everybody knows. So this is the first I'm going to talk about the SDSS main galaxy survey. This is a plot of just some galaxies. And so this is the paper, Tegmark, Blanton, Strauss, and many, many other people. There's 200,000 galaxies covering 2,400 square degrees. So note that this is only a quarter of the final target. And the statistics really go proportional to the area. I mean, inverse of the square root of the area. The mean redshift is 0.1. So this is the lowest redshift of the probes. And Max has a nice web page where you can find out more. So one thing is, it's remarkable how little of the sky, to me, I guess, has really been covered. This is only 6% that was used in this power spectrum measurement. The white stuff is the part of the sky in the sample. It's the Schlegel et al. Dust map, which is on here, I imagine, to provide contrast. Maybe to show that they're avoiding the dustiest places. So here's the actual power spectrum measurement. This is real space power. They've done some tricks to take out the redshift space distortions, power K. Complications in the galaxy power spectrum are bias. There's even on very large scales, the overall amplitude of the galaxy power spectrum relative to the dark matter is at this point completely unknown. Redshift space distortions, we can correct for them relatively easily on large scales where the fluctuations are small. On smaller scales where things become nonlinear, we have a hard time correcting for redshift space distortions. And of course, nonlinearity kicks in. And we have no first principles way of calculating galaxy clustering. So once we lose the just linear bias prescription, we can't really use the power anymore, even though it's measured very well on scales smaller than about 0.2 K in inverse H inverse megaparsecs, which is where usually stop doing cosmological fits. So this shows another a look at the galaxy survey, where the point here is that these colors identify different luminosities, and the closest galaxies are fainter than the ones far away. Not surprisingly, they're just farther away. You can't see anything but the brightest ones. And this actually causes a problem, because the brighter galaxies cluster more strongly, meaning they have a higher bias, which leads to the second observable that I'm going to talk about, the galaxy-galaxy lensing bias determination, which was made in this paper here. So bias is just defined as the ratio of the galaxy power spectrum to the dark matter power spectrum squared. And this is the thing we don't know, although on large scales, we have good reason to believe it should be k independent. So this is just a constant on large scales, at least for one type of galaxy. So scale independent, less than this range where we usually stop doing fits. If we can determine the galaxy power, the amplitude, we know the bias. We could use the, we would have an absolute measurement of the dark matter clustering at redshift near zero, which then you can start to do things like compare to the evolution of the strength of dark matter clustering from low to high redshift, which probes dark energy, things like that. And in fact, we'll show that this bias constraint helps particularly on constraining, say, W, the equation of state of dark energy. So here's the power spectrum of galaxies of different luminosity from faint, which, remember, faint galaxies we don't see out to as far, so you can't probe very large scales. I'm going to. Several slides at least on it. So this is the power spectrum of galaxies of different luminosity. The brightest ones are most strongly clustered. This just has the trend divided out. So this is consistent with what's been found before. Okay, so halos. We think that galaxies form in dark matter halos. And while we can't simulate galaxies, we can simulate dark matter halos reasonably well as long as simple cold dark matter WIMPs or something. So we can calculate using simulations how we expect halos to cluster, what we expect the bias of halos of a given mass to be within a given cosmological model. And what we find is that high mass halos, this is the mass normalized to some nonlinear mass, high mass halos are more strongly clustered than low mass halos. Particularly, high mass halos are more strongly clustered than dark matter. This bias of one means clustered like dark matter. And low mass halos are less strongly clustered. So this comes from simulations, but there's also analytic understanding of this, in that rarer objects, which require rarer, more massive objects, require larger statistical fluctuations to form, and therefore a large scale overdensity has leads to a greater increase in the number high mass halos. So, and where I'm going with this is, if we can measure the mass of a galaxy through galaxy-galaxy lensing, then we can take this bias of halos of that mass and use it as the bias for those galaxies. This just shows that this bias, as once you've scaled to the masses to the nonlinear mass, this bias relation is fairly independent of cosmology. This is just many different cosmologies. cosmological parameters. Well, just defined as mass within the sphere has an, if you take the linear density field, which you can evolve forward, you know, without a simulation, and smooth varying radius spheres, the sphere, the nonlinear mass is the mass enclosed in the sphere that has RMS fluctuations of 1.68. And that comes from that 1.68 comes from spherical collapse. You expect these halos to, these regions to have formed a halo. So galaxy-galaxy lensing lets us determine the mass of the galaxies, where this just means taking, say, a set of each of these figures is galaxies of a certain, in a certain range of luminosity, and you stack the galaxies of that in that luminosity bin, stack up the galaxies behind galaxies in that luminosity bin, measure the distortion of the shapes of those galaxies, and you fit to determine what the mass of the foreground galaxies must be. So these are the most luminous galaxies, and there there's clear detections of this. This is the mass as a function of radius. Clear detections. And then for very faint galaxies, there's no detection, meaning they're lighter. These are heavier. It's not surprising, and it's consistent with their degree of clustering. Remember, the most luminous galaxies were the most clustered. Anyway. You go on and use these masses for galaxies of certain luminosity. This is luminosity on the this axis. This is the amplitude of their clustering. And this is consistent with the kind of, so these are real galaxies. This is consistent with what we predicted from the halo bias and simulations combined with the mass measurements for these galaxies from data galaxy-galaxy lensing. So we have measurements of bias as a function of luminosity. And these aren't perfect. There's some 15% level error, including statistics and systematics. But when we go do cosmological model fitting, we'll use this bias constraint, and it will help a lot. 5 minutes. Okay. Okay. So Lyman alpha forest, which is definitely not going to be emphasized, because I don't have time. There's two papers. We used 3,300 quasars to probe the intergalactic medium in the range 2.1 to 4.3, redshift range 2.1 to 4.3. There's a chi-squared code. If you want to use these results in cosmological parameter fitting, all you have to do is input a linear theory power spectrum or redshift 3, and it'll give you the Lyman alpha forest chi-squared. And that's at my website. No, it could easily be in CosmoMC. Right? So remember this scale figure. The Lyman alpha forest is particularly good for measuring the scale dependence of clustering when combined with the CMB, because it probes the smallest scales. You have a long lever arm. Just to make sure you know what the Lyman Alpha Forest is, at least. We have a quasar at, say, redshift 3.7. Its light propagates through the intergalactic medium to us, is absorbed by neutral hydrogen, and this is a simulation, but this is a real quasar spectrum. We can also make a simulated spectrum from this simulation. This is the Sloan spectrum in the structure here maps the structure here just because the observed wavelength of absorption is the Lyman alpha transition wavelength times 1 plus the redshift of the gas. So this gives you a map of the structure. And we have 1.4 million pixels in these 3,300 spectra. We measure their power spectrum. Unlike galaxies, we get a very good measurement as a function of redshift. This goes from 2.2 to 4.3. Now we're measuring redshifts at redshift 3, and the conversion to standard co-moving H inverse megaparsecs requires you to know the Hubble constant at that redshift. So the natural scale is just inverse kilometers per second. This is power. But the conversion factor is about 100 in any cosmological model. So this is a K of about 1. And we use simulations to infer the linear theory power from these observations. This is the amplitude of the Lyman alpha forest inferred linear power and slope. So this is at redshift 3 and at about 1 inverse H inverse megaparsec. This green is the Lyman alpha forest constraint. Blue is what you get if you project the WMAP map constraint for a power law, meaning no running into this plane. Red is if the WMAP, the fit to WMAP has running. So you see the Lyman alpha force is going to help a lot. I'm not going to talk about acoustic oscillations and the LRGs. And they actually haven't been combined in full-blown cosmological model fitting with the other observations quite yet, although that exists, but it's not in published papers yet. Here's the N spectral index, running of the spectral index constraint. Two sigma limits, red from WMAP. Green is then ruled out by the Lyman alpha forest. Leave white there. There's no indication of running. So the Lyman alpha forest is particularly good at measuring the power spectrum parameters, the amplitude, slope, and running of the power spectrum. The galaxies at lower redshift are good at measuring omega matter, the Hubble constant. They help more with the equation of state of dark energy. So red here is WMAP plus galaxies plus supernova in W and omega matter. Green is WMAP plus galaxies plus bias plus Lyman alpha, and then you put them together and you get yellow, where here it's the bias, not the Lyman alpha, that's making this improvement in the constraint on these parameters. Okay, so I'll just finish up by saying that coming out next summer will be 8,000 square degrees, which is a factor of little more than 3 larger than what was used in the main galaxy power spectrum that's been published. 12,000 high redshift quasars, which is a factor of 4 more than I used in my Lyman alpha forest paper, and many more galaxies. So just through statistics alone, these constraints will improve. quite a lot. Okay. Okay, some questions. Where's the microphone? It's always the same.
A little bit fast. The Lyman alpha is the green, and okay. Sorry, I just wanted to see it again.
Yeah. So this is the blue unfilled is what you'd get with galaxies alone and not the Lyman alpha forest. In many cases, you can always make these plots in two directions, and sometimes you would find that the galaxies would have done the same thing. This isn't one of those cases.
So I'm still confused, I guess. So I thought the Lyman alpha made the running less or more constrained. Oh, right. Yeah. Okay. Okay, thanks.
Okay, question there. That's it.
Yeah, I did? No, I didn't. I just blew by it because I didn't have time. That's this. this is Daniel Eisenstein's work. This is the correlation function of luminous red galaxies. So luminous red galaxies are selected intentionally to be higher redshift, and they probe a larger volume, so they're better. They're really just better for doing cosmology than the main galaxy sample. For whatever reason, the analysis is a little behind the main galaxy sample. Yes, and it'll get better. So,
well, sorry about this. There used to be two microphones. I think one disappeared.
Yeah. And that there was also another survey, the 2-degree galaxy redshift survey, a similar claim of seeing the same feature. But that time, the analysis was done in Fourier space rather than in real space. So that may go some way to answer your question. Two independent groups using two different techniques, different surveys, although the 2DF is much smaller survey, find agreement with different statistical significance, of course. So
there's another sort of, probably the next big result that will come out is Nikhil Padmanabhan has done an analysis of angular clustering of LRGs, so just not using the redshift survey, you can get more, and it's basically a different sample, and find the same thing in that.
Okay, Christian here.
Yeah, so for the galaxy lensing, you said that the final error on the bias is like 3%.
Right.
The uncertainty in the bias after coming from galaxy lensing is 3%.
That's the error that you just would naively read off that plot. It just means that the bias, particularly for low masses, isn't particularly sensitive to the mass. But there's other issues like, well, just statistics and calibration bias of the galaxy lensing, which take the error up to more like 15%.
And so what was used by Tegmark et al. As an uncertainty, and where did the bias come from?
So at that point, well, I assume they had an infinite error in bias. They were just marginalizing over it. That's the whole point of the galaxy-galaxy lensing.
So they had to correct for the fact that different galaxies were clusters in different ways, so they have different biasing. So if you look at their plot for the bias as a function of scale, it's scale dependent. And it's scale dependent because of what he was explaining. Very luminous galaxies are highly biased and probe much larger scales because you see them farther away. And faint galaxies, you see them close by, so they probe smaller distances. So that's why that curve goes like that.
Yeah,
it's that you're seeing different galaxy population at different scales.
More questions?
Yeah. If you use this measurement of the acoustic peak from the galaxy surveys, what curvature does that favor?
What
curvature? Is it consistent with a flat universe? Or?
Yeah, this is the best. That was going to be my main point about that. This is the best measurement of the curvature, even better than putting the CMB together with supernovae, which I think surprised even Daniel Eisenstein. But this is the constraint on the curvature. Yeah, everything is always CMB plus. Yeah.
More questions? Well, if not, it's time for a free lunch. We should thank the speaker again. And the lunch is exactly above here, so just find a way of getting up there. And there's the bistro.
Oh, thank you. 30 minutes.
Yeah, no, it's fine.
I was watching my watch.
I didn't dare. It's this thing. Put it back and it works.
What do you do?
Well, it's a USB. So, So you just put it in your USB port.
Yeah. I see. And then you put it.
Yeah. I didn't dare to disturb you too much. So I didn't dare to jump in.
You could have.
So. Okay. So in a final error, so what's a laminar? So what's a ratio of consistent? So is, I mean, when you will improve by a factor of 4, the sample is going to be like constraints on.
Will be actually.
But well, the factors. But it says about. So what's a principle and constraint on running and. Running on alpha, what's a